You're now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. My name is Bob. Today I have a special show because I am doing something that I haven't done in a long time. I am actually doing an interview, and today the interview is on the phone with a singer and songwriter named Billy Miller, who had a really long career and is still doing music. He was in a bunch of groups, mainly based in Milwaukee, at least at the start of his career. But all the records, almost all of them, came out on Chicago labels. So it's definitely interesting and will relate to Chicago. So first of all, Billy, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. So first of all, can you talk about where you were born?
Yes, about a little town called Muncie, Indiana, about 60-some miles from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Okay. And were you involved in music when you were in Muncie?
Well, in elementary school, I picked up violin. I sung in the choir at school and in the church. My mom, she did a dub, and I think I picked up the bug and the passion from her, but all everybody in the family were musically inclined.
So did you have, you said your mom did a dub, like she recorded a demo, is that what you said?
Yes, and you know, back then there was a magazine, if you wanted to have music put to your poem or song, they would do that, and she sent some songs in. But, of course, they were taken. She was not given credit, but she did make a little dub, and I remember hearing it.
Was it a gospel record or a secular record?
Gospel.
Okay. And that was sometime in the 50s she did that?
Yeah, I would say 48. 49.
Oh, wow, really early than that. So you said you played instruments when you were in high school.
No, elementary school.
Did you, and you sang in the choir in church in Muncie. Did you ever start doing secular music when you were in Muncie?
Oh, we sung under the street lights, doo-wop stuff. Of the latest hits that were out at the time, but I didn't get a chance to do much of that because I had to be in before dark, and the guys that were singing, they could stay out late, but that's where I really got the bug.
Is that where you learned to sing harmony, too, or you did in church?
No, I already knew how to sing harmony.
It was from church, probably?
Yeah, and mostly, yeah.
So, did you have a, like, I know you were just singing on the street corners. Did you even have a, like, a group with a name, or you just singing with some dudes?
I was just singing with some guys in the neighborhood whenever they would let me. I wasn't part of the in crowd, and so I didn't get much chance to do any singing with them, but a few times.
Okay. So did you go to high school in Muncie also?
Yes. Lost my mom in 54.
I'm sorry. Sorry to hear that.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. No. I'm saying I'm sorry about your loss. Early in your life.
I had to leave, get out of the environment, and so the following year, I was headed for the 11th grade and talked to a friend of mine into going into Army, and so I went into the Army, and when I got out of the Army, I moved to Milwaukee because my sister, that was a couple years older than myself, had moved there, and she said I could come and stay until I got a job and moved out on my own, which I did.
So around what year did you say you moved to Milwaukee?
About 1959, December of 59.
Okay. So did you get involved with music soon after you moved to Milwaukee?
Yes, I worked for a department store. I was a supervisor, shipping and receiving clerk prior to being a supervisor in the ownership and in receiving room, and the manager of the store heard me doing my breaks, playing the guitar and singing hits of the at the time, just prior to the Beatles coming to America. And he asked me, he called me into his office and asked why was I doing it. I said, I love to sing, and I'm practicing every chance I get. And he says, well, I've got a couple nephews that got a band, and they're looking for a lead singer. Would you be interested? And I said, of course. And so I went to the house, and they liked what I could do, and they were named John Condos and the Galaxies.
And they were, well, first of all, what, do you remember the name of the store?
Arlen's Department Store.
Okay. And was that a big store in Milwaukee or a small store?
Oh, yeah. You could buy just about anything under that tent at the time. This would have been 60, 61.
And when did you learn to play guitar?
When I started working there, a guy worked there. He said he played guitar for a band, and if I wanted to take lessons, he would teach me. I took a lesson, and he wanted me to learn notes, and I wanted to learn chords. So he said, bring in one of your favorite records, and he would write down the chords and show me how to play it. And I took in a Beatles song. I don't know what it was. And I seen that I could teach myself that, and I never went back anymore.
Okay. So you picked it up right around the same time. And so the department store manager heard you, and he introduced you to a band called John Condos and the Galaxies. Is that right?
That's right. His name was Stan Fisher. He was a Greek.
Okay. Were the Galaxies like a white band?
All white, yes.
And how?
I think they were high school guys, and I think they did have a black guy that did some singing, but not much.
So they needed like a soulful lead singer, and you became their lead singer?
Yes.
So that was around 63?
Yes.
So what did you do with them? Did you do shows, or what was the story?
We opened shows for James Brown two or three times. Because at that time, you know, if you were a union, and people that had records out wanted to come there, they would have someone to warm up the audience and open the show. And so we did that for James Brown, a girl group called The Emotions, a solo artist named Major Lance, had a song called A Monkey Time.
Were the shows all in Milwaukee that you opened up for?
Yes.
And so what was your act like? Were you like a James Brown type singer, or what kind of stuff did you do?
Well, matter of fact, first song that I did with Galaxies was James Brown's song, his first hit, Please, Please, Please.
Okay.
And I just fell on my knees singing Please, Please, Please. And I heard afterwards he didn't like that at all. Because I'm singing his song. And some of the people thought that, you know, is he James Brown, you know? And I said, I'm sorry, I learned the hard way. I won't do that anymore, you know. And we did... You helped me to remember that we did do a 45, and I remember before we went out to open the show, I took a 45 to James Brown. He was sitting on the four-way table, and I said, would you please see what you can do to help us if I give you a 45? He said, sure, and he took it. I never heard. We didn't hear anything from him after that.
Yeah, I mean, he was a busy dude, and
yeah, and I don't think he liked it at all, man.
He probably was pissed about the by you doing his song.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the 45 you're talking about. It's called I Made a Change in Hip Snap. And one thing is on the 45, it's not Billy Miller and John Kondos. It credits the Inspirations, which, and there's like a whole group. So what's the story with that? Who were the Inspirations?
The Inspirations were two guys and myself. Bay Campbell. His real name was Clarence Campbell. And I, prior to meeting him, I was going to rock and roll shows and would ask questions during break time. Did anybody know anyone that wanted to start a band, a group, or was one already existing? And that's how I met Bay, and same with Willie Patterson. So I had been inspired by the rock and roll artists. I thought, I can do that. I may not be as good, but I can do that. And so on my way to practice, I came up with a song called Your Wish Is My Command. And I played the guitar and the chords for them, and they picked up the harmony. And that's how the Inspiration name came about.
So I'm trying to understand a couple things. First of all, were you originally a solo singer with John Kondos, or did you already have the Inspirations together?
We already were together, but they just wanted me, and I don't like being, well, at that time, I didn't like being the one out front, all eyes on me, and I felt, you know, comfortable with somebody on my left and right, and singing harmony with me in background. So they said, okay, bring them in and we'll try them out. And that's how that happened.
So how did the Inspirations form? You said you went to different clubs looking for members to start a group. That was before you even got hooked up with John Kondos, is that correct?
Yes.
So you were actually looking to start a secular vocal group? And
yes.
How did it actually come together? You just found some dudes and they were like, yeah, we want to sing?
They said they would do that, but they weren't. Bay and Willie wasn't really serious. They only did it because they wanted to meet girls and travel and have a good time. But when they seen that something could happen, then they got a little bit more serious. But I would pretty much always had to hunt them down for us to practice.
So when did the Inspirations form?
I would think about that early 63. There was a song, Shirley and Lee, Love, Love is Strange. That was a hit. So, and the Beatles, Love Me Do. So I'm thinking 63.
Was Love and Strange the Mickey and Sylvia song?
Yes.
Okay. So you formed around 63, and the group originally, you didn't have a band, and you were just you and two other guys. Did you do shows, or did you just start practicing? What was happening?
I would go to clubs and ask, would they let us perform there? And we would use the house band. We would do covered show or songs, so the band were, you know, good enough to and knew the song, that all we had to do is do our part vocally, and that's how we were doing before I got with the Galaxies.
So how long were the Inspirations together before you actually did a show?
Maybe a year, year and a half.
So you guys just got together and sang harmony together, like in the basement or something like that, until you thought you were good enough to do a show?
Yes.
How frequently would you practice?
Just about every day.
Okay. And who came up with the name The Inspirations, and what is it? What was the story?
Like I said, I was inspired, and I wanted to inspire others, and I felt, well, Inspiration is a good name. I found out later that this female group that backed Elvis Presley would call this Sweet Inspirations, and so I thought we might have to change our name, but Reed never did.
Okay. Yeah, back then, yeah, there were like always little local groups that didn't know about other local groups in other cities that had the same name. So, yeah, and the Sweet Inspirations were a big group, but they were like had a different name with the Sweet in it.
Yeah, yeah.
So you were together for about a year. You started doing shows, and at the shows you said you just did the popular songs at the time. How long after that, after you started doing shows, did you get hooked up with John Kondos and Galaxies?
I think that once the store manager, Stan Fisher, told the band John Kondos about me, then I got with them, and we did a few shows. We would go to different big cities in Wisconsin. And eventually let Bay and Willie join us. And we were about a 10-piece band.
So how long were the Inspirations together before? Like, you were together for a year, you started doing shows, and then sometime after that, you joined John Kondos. Did that happen almost right after the Inspirations started doing the shows?
It was real close at the same time.
And originally you did a few shows just with you, and then you brought the other group members in. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So, and you said you started actually traveling with John Kondos and the Galaxies and the Inspirations. Is that correct?
Say that again.
So you actually started doing shows in different places with John Kondos and the Galaxies and the Inspirations. Is that correct?
Yeah. We were advertising John Kondos and the Galaxies featuring the Inspirations.
And what kind of – did you do shows mainly in Milwaukee? Where did you do shows? Do you remember the clubs?
Yeah, mostly in Milwaukee. And, of course, when we got with the band, then we went out of the city in different cities, Green Bay, Waukesha, Madison, Wisconsin, you know.
And what were your shows like? Did you still just do like rock songs? Did you have originals? Did you do funky songs and ballads? What were they like?
Mostly the top 15. I remember we were doing Louie. And I think Chuck Berry's song hit. Stuff like that.
And you were, it wasn't like a, it was sort of like a review, but you were the only singers for the band, is that correct? Like they didn't do their own stuff also?
That's, I did most of the lead singing.
Okay. So sometime after, and you said they were just in high school when you joined them, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So like, were they limited, but did they continue after high school to do shows, and that's when you started traveling? Like, what's the story with that?
Yeah, they, when they graduated, then we started working even more than we had prior, because they were, you know, didn't have to deal with school. I think the youngest guy is about 16 or 17 years old, too young to be in a club, but...
Do you remember the names of any of the John Kondos and the Fabulous Galaxies?
No, you know, I really, all I remember is John and his brother. His name gets me. I don't remember his name. He was a drummer, and John was the lead guitar player.
Okay. So with the Inspirations, you ended up cutting two records. One record is just the Inspirations, and the other record is the Inspirations with John Kondos and the Fabulous Galaxies. Do you know which one was first?
No.
Okay.
I don't remember.
The one with the Galaxies, it's called I Made a Change and Hip Snap. And obviously they're playing on the record since they're credited on the record. The other record you did was I'll Take a Chance on You and Your Wish is My Command. So did John Kondos play on the Your Wish is My Command, or?
No.
So do you think it's probable that you did the one with the galaxies first, and then you left the galaxies to do the other one?
Yes, I had gone to Chicago because I had my youngest sister living there, and they told me to go down on Michigan Street Avenue, whatever. There was a lot of recording companies, and I found one, and I booked us. I hired four musicians that the recording company used.
So was that after you left? Your group had broke away from John Kondo since you had to hire a band.
Yeah, we broke away.
So let me play the first record then, because we've been talking for a while, and I'd like the audience to hear some of the stuff you've done. The first record you did with John Kondos and the Galaxies, it was called Hip Snap, and I Made a Change. Hip Snap is like a funky dance record. I Made a Change is a really nice ballad. I'm going to play I Made a Change, and then we can talk some more. Is that okay?
That's great.
Okay, so this is The Inspirations, backed by John Kondos and the Fabulous Galaxies. This track is called I Made a Change.
I wanna say before
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM, Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. If you have just tuned in, I am currently doing an interview with a singer named Billy Miller, who I think was singing lead on that song, I Made a Change. I don't know if you were hearing it, Billy. Do you remember if you sang lead on that song? Can you hear?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, I'll send it to you because you don't remember. It was like a kind of private press thing where it came out on a label called Galaxy. So clearly John Kondos just pressed it up himself. So you don't remember much about the recording or writing or anything about that song, right?
Faintly. I think we might have been taking them around and selling them during our performance.
Okay. And that's the record you mentioned before that you had actually you tried to get James Brown to listen to, right?
Yeah, I do remember him. I'm giving him a 45.
Okay. Yeah, it's on a blue label, It looks like it was recorded and pressed in Milwaukee, or at least recorded there, but I'm not sure. I'll send it to you so you can listen to both sides. The other side is a funky record called Hip Snap, like a dance record. So you said that you ended up kind of breaking away from John Kondo soon after that. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think they said, Billy, we don't need Bay in. And, Willie, because they're not serious. And we don't need any other, you know, members in this band. And I said, well, I can't tell you what to do, you know, but they're my friends. And so, I don't know, a few months later, I just told them I don't want to be a part of the group anymore.
Okay, so you broke away from the band around that time. Do you remember around when that is? Because I know your next record got released, I think, around 67. So did you break away around 66, 67?
Maybe around 66.
Okay. So what's the story? What did the group do after you broke away from John Kondo's? Did you still do shows with... at clubs just with the house band? Did you get another band? What happened?
Yeah, we would use the house band, and we would do private parties and juke joints and wherever gigs we could get. You know, I would try and book us there. But like I said earlier, I hired studio musicians to back us up. I took my guitar and showed them how the feeling and the chords were on I'll Take a Chance on You.
And Your Wishes.
And The Opposite Side.
So you're talking about your second record now, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So you had broken away from the group, and you had started to talk about how you had a second record that you wanted to record, and you went down to Chicago to record it, is that correct?
Yes. So wonderful record. It was established. They had hit songs. And that's, I hired them. And after we recorded that, the man came up, Mr. Leaner, I think, was the owner, and he asked what was the purpose of me doing that, just for the experience. I said, no, hopefully somebody will like this record and put us under contract, and he did that.
So
you know, at this time, I can't even remember the other side of Your Wish Is My Command.
It's I'll Take a Chance on You.
Oh, yeah. That's
so
right. I told you about that. They came up with those words, and he sung it for me, and I listened to his voice, and I came up with the chords and arranged it. I did a little bit of it, but he did most of it. And then on the flip side, Your Wish Is My Command, I did 90% of that, but on the fade-out, they took over the lead, and I jumped in the background.
Okay, so you had originally, I didn't know this before talking to you, you had just booked the Wonderful Studios to try to record like a demo, is that right?
No, record a 45 record, and hopefully that someone would make, you know, manufacture it and put it out.
But that's... Well, what do you mean? Like, that's different than a demo? Like, what do you mean? Because you wanted to, like, get a dub or something and then shop it around. Is that correct?
Yes.
So,
I believe at the time, I don't know, the master. You know, I could take it if anybody was interested, and then they would, you know, make copies, manufacture it, and distribute.
And you talked a little bit about this, but how did you end up recording in Chicago at Wonderful Records, and why didn't you record in Milwaukee?
At that time, I don't think there was any place in Milwaukee that I knew that had some kind of exposure that I could get, you know, history that I could see if they had any kind of pull in the record industry. And Wonderful Records did have that.
So you went to Chicago and just went to Wonderful Records, knocked on the door, and were like, can I record at your studio?
I went to Chess, found out that they was mostly known for blues. I went to a couple other places, Johnny Pate, then the Ranger of the Impressions, and they weren't interested in new artists, but they thought that I had the ability to write. And I was disappointed. Bill, you ever thought about writing? I said, only because I had to, I'd come up with this. But I'm a lead singer, and I would rather someone else would write for me.
So was that at Kurtom Records?
Yes.
So you knocked on the door, and you were like, can we record? And they wanted to hire you as a writer.
Yeah, and so I ended up going to Wonderful Records. They had an artist named, I can't think of his name, but he had a song called Twine Time.
That's Alvin Cash?
Yeah, Alvin Cash. And it was a big hit. And a couple other artists that don't come to my mind right at this time.
Well, one of their biggest hits was the 5-2-tone Shake a Tail Feather.
Yeah, Shake a Tail Feather.
And they had Otis Clay and Harold Barrage.
Like Harvey Scales of the Seven Sounds, Harvey wrote Disco Lady for Johnny Taylor, and going around to different clubs trying to find bands to back us up, inspirations, I met Harvey. Harvey came around. We lived in the same old project apartments, and he brought his first 45 selling door to door, and that's how I met him. So he kind of helped me. He introduced me to the Esquires for the Get On Up. And so I was shopping. That's how I ended up with Wonderful Records.
So at Wonderful, you originally paid for session time, recorded it, and then the Lehner Brothers heard it, and they liked it, and they offered you a record deal. Is that right?
Yeah, a year contract with a year option. And would you believe it, they wait a whole year. I bet you I called every 3 months. Telling them, asking, when are you going to release it? We're going to. We get around to it. And I think they waited purposely. I can't say purposely, but I just got discouraged. And finally, before the year was out, they did. I heard it on the radio. And I said, I'm not going to do any more, you know, recording with them. That's the end of that.
That actually got released on the Midas label, which was the label that the Lehner Brothers started up after Wonderful sort of went out of business. And the record actually came out, I think, around 67. So that makes sense with your timeline. Like, if you recorded it in 66 and they just sat on it and didn't release it until 67. I'm going to play the record, and then we can talk some more. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, so this is the Inspirations, which with probably their second record, and this is called Your Wish Is My Command.
I really can't. Please forgive. be. It's to be loved or not to be. Parts that love fulfills, and the pleasure of it all, oh, as far as I can recall, that's why the decision that I made
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM, Chicago. If you're just tuning in, I am doing an interview with a singer named Billy Miller. Those two records you just heard were both sides of his group, The Inspirations, recorded in Chicago at Wonderful Records. That was Your Wish Is My Command with I'll Take a Chance on You on the flip side. So, Billy, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, sorry about the phone problems. Anyways, so that you said that you recorded it and they sat on it for a year and then they finally released it. Did it get any radio play when it was released?
Oh, yeah. I was working for Johnson Controls that made large stuff for companies. And the guy that I work with, he said, I heard your record on the way to work. I said, you did? And I said, great, it's about time. And so on the way home, I tuned into the radio station, and I heard it myself. I think they sit on this for about 8-9 months.
So you didn't even have a copy of the record at that time. You just heard it on the radio.
That's right.
And then you went out to the store and bought a copy of the record?
Yes.
So, and you're talking about you heard it on the radio in Milwaukee?
That's correct.
Do you know if it got played anywhere else, like in Chicago or anywhere else?
I don't know. But I thought that definitely they would be putting it on the radio in where we recorded it at, you know? But I knew they were not a major company, and for a few years after that, I wondered why they didn't do more with it. But according to the Encyclopedia of Rhythm and Blues, they went out of business. So obviously, they were in the process of that time. Maybe that's why they sit on it. They didn't have the finance. They didn't. They were losing their distribution, you know, et cetera.
Okay. Yeah, they weren't as much of a kind of power as they were when they were Wonderful Records by the time they were Midas Records.
Yeah. So, and they had about four or five different labels.
Yeah. So you heard it for a couple months in Milwaukee, and but it wasn't like a major hit in Milwaukee, right?
No, that's correct.
But you did see it in stores, and you managed to buy a copy.
Yes, my sister that I moved with, she was a school teacher there, and she told me I ought to check the record store, and I did, and I asked the people that worked there, and they said it's selling pretty good. Made me feel good about that.
Okay. So by that time, you said you had decided not to even work with the Leaners any longer because they sat on your recording so long. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So did the inspiration stay together?
Yes, but I don't know how much longer after that. They had a brother, Carl Campbell, and he had a group that was fantastic. And then I met the Comic Books, and they were like the Coasters and those other groups that make you laugh. And
like they did novelty-type songs, right?
Say what?
They did, like, novelty-type songs.
Like, yeah, novelty.
So...
And I met... I waited around, and I introduced myself to the Dorsey Brothers. And they told me that we were breaking up. And so we got together. One of the Dorseys, William, lived in the projects that I was in, and Betty Bias lived in the projects. We lived about a block or two apart, and so we started a group together.
So the Dorsey Brothers were in the Comic Books?
Yes.
And the Comic Books were like a mixed-race group, right?
That's correct.
And they were breaking up around the time that you were looking for a new group, and you got with them?
Yes.
And I'm sorry, I'm cutting. I just wanted to clarify everything before we go on. And Betty was another singer you just met and who lived in the same housing you lived in.
Yeah.
How did you meet her?
I was a guy that I met that was in a gospel group that just did a 45, and they were their lead singer was wanting to quit and go into ministering. And this guy's name was Odell Carter. And he asked me, he said, I heard you can sing. Would you mind pretending to be the guy that just did this recording and take his place? Because we got shows to fulfill. And I said, okay. You know, being that I was brought up in church and sung with two friends of mine from Muncie, they were brothers, that I took this guy's place until Betty and the Dorsey Brothers and I got tight, and we started that group, Billy and the Highliners.
So you said you took the place temporarily for a gospel group, the lead singer. Do you remember the name of the group?
No, I don't.
And so right after that, you formed Billy and the Highliners with the Dorsey Brothers. What were their first names again?
Floyd Dorsey and William Dorsey.
And a woman named Betty. And you said who introduced you to Betty again?
Odell Carter was the guy's name.
So after you left the gospel group, he introduced you to Betty. He wasn't related, he just knew her?
She was a friend of his wife. And she was visiting at the time that I came to Odell's apartment, and I heard her singing. I asked her, would she be interested in getting in a group? And she said yes, and that's how we got with her.
And was it Was there a reason you didn't want an all-male group this time, like you wanted her voice in it, or you just thought she
would? My sister and Muncie, Margie, she and I did a dub, because I ran up on one of those old machines that you can make a dub, you know?
Like a recording booth or something?
Yeah, and you can do it right there on the spot.
Okay.
You know? And I liked our voices, the male and female voice. And, of course, Margie, my sister, was getting married, and she didn't want to do that. And so I had made up my mind I was going to look for a female to sing with. And knowing that Floyd and Williams were professionals in my book, I definitely wanted them to be a part of it. They and Willie, like I said earlier, they were very serious about it. And I got tired of hunting them down. And so with the Dorsey brothers, we really got tight and was serious about singing.
So the Inspirations, had they like officially broken up, or you were just so like non-serious about stuff, you're like, I'm just going to make another group right now?
Yes. We stayed friends. We ran across each other, but we didn't perform anymore as the Inspirations anymore.
Okay. So Billy and the Highliners formed around 67, 68, is that right?
I say 67, later part of 67, early 68, yes.
And so you got all together, you clicked. How did you come up with the name?
Well, I was the one that got the group together. I don't know if they asked me to be the leader, you know, with my name out front or what, but because I had some recordings and some, you know, recognition, we come up with Billy and the Highliners, you know, like, why the Highliners? I thought, you know, looking at these, going to these rock and roll shows, the artist's name was up on the billboard, highlighted in, you know, large letters blinking, and I thought, well, we're not headliners, but maybe one day. And that's how I came up with the Highliners.
So Highliners was just a play on the word headliners.
Yeah.
So how long when you first got together, did you just practice it before doing shows? Did you start doing shows right away?
Yes, we did. The Dorsey brothers had some connections, and I had some connections, Harvey Scale, and the Esquires had some connections that gave us some, that's how we started to, you know, get noticed around town.
Okay. So you didn't have a band, you were just doing shows with the house band at different clubs.
Yeah.
And so you soon after that, you ended up doing a recording, is that correct?
Yes.
What's the story behind that?
I, again, contacted a record company in Chicago, and I got that connection through my brother-in-law that was married to my younger sister. He had record stores. He was rather managing them. And he got involved with some guys that were starting their own recording company. And they asked him, did he know anybody that could sing? He said, yeah, my brother-in-law. And so he contacted me, and I went and got involved with these guys. They told me to come up with some songs and come back, and they would record us. And that's how we came up with that.
So
that
your
record.
Your brother-in-law, did he live in Chicago?
Yes, he lived in Chicago at the time. See, when I lost my mom, my youngest sister was sent to Chicago to live with his sister, my father's sister. And she finished school because she was only 10 years old. She finished school and she met her husband there. And he loved jazz music, and that's how he got involved. And then, you know, saw a chance to maybe get involved with a record company, new record company. In 68, you know, blacks were venturing out into the record business, and he saw the opportunity, and that's how I got that connection.
Yeah, there were the start of a lot of small independent labels. That's what you're referring to.
Yeah.
So what was the name? Do you remember the name of the stores that your brother-in-law managed?
No.
Do you remember?
No, I didn't. I never even went to any of them.
Do you remember the name of the record company that he hooked you up with?
Tyfi.
Was it Telfi?
Yes. I'm sorry. Telfi. T-E-L-F-I.
Okay. And do you remember the name of the people at the record label that you were involved with, that you dealt with?
Bob Orr was the engineer. And why I remember that, Muhammad Speak was a pretty popular newspaper that was, you know, known in the black community. And they came down and took a picture of us and explained this group from Milwaukee going through their recording. And I remember, I think it was January 5th of 1968.
Okay, so you know pretty much exactly when you recorded it.
Yeah, because of that.
Yeah, and I just want to note that Telfi, a bunch of people, a few people were involved with it. And I, like listeners in Chicago would probably know, Richard Pegue actually was one of the people involved with it too. Like, it was the name of his, like, DJ company. And there was another person named Robert Pears who was also involved with it. So I don't know if you remember meeting any of them, but I think it would be interesting to Chicago listeners that famous radio DJ Richard Pegue was involved with that recording.
Mm-hmm.
So you said you pretty much knew exactly when you recorded it. You came down to Chicago. What was the date again?
January 5th, 1968.
And you had one song written, is that correct?
Yes.
What was the name of the song?
Lonely World.
Okay, well, I'm going to play that song, and then we can talk a little bit more. Is that okay?
That's great. That's fine with me.
Okay, this is Billy's second group called Billy and the Highliners, and this was recorded in Chicago. This song is called Lonely World.
It's dark, it seems. I'm lost. it's no secret. I tell you, you see.
I lost her.
I lost my baby.
I lost her.
I feel so bad.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM, Chicago. If you're just tuning in, I have on the phone a singer named Billy Miller who sang in a bunch of groups. That was just his second group, also from Milwaukee, called Billy and the Highliners. That was a track called Lonely World, cut in Chicago early 1968. Billy, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. So that record, you recorded in 68 and you came down to Chicago with one song. The flip side is like a dance record called Scout, which you also wrote. What's the story with that?
They said, Billy, we need another, we need a B-side. Can you come up with something? I said, yeah. How much time I got? Can you do it tomorrow? I said, well, I'll do my best. And again, I had my younger sister living there. We went there, and they put us on the floor overnight, stayed there. And I was thinking, what can I come up with? And dance. Maybe I can create a dance song. And I was into cowboys and Indians back in, when I was a kid. And I thought, you know, Indians be dancing around the fire and putting their hands up to the head and look like they're looking over at something. And so I started writing in regards to that, dancing around. And then I showed the Dorsey brothers, and they came up with the background. And that's how that song came about.
Okay.
We just kind of, on the spot, come up with a dance.
So on one day you recorded Lonely World, and then the next day, that night you wrote Scout, and then the next day you recorded Scout.
Yes.
So Lonely World, can you talk about who sings lead on it?
I'm singing lead on both sides.
Okay. And the background on all... both tracks is the Dorsey brothers and Betty
Baez.
Do you know how to spell Betty's last name?
I think it's B I S.
Okay. and
B I E S or something like that.
Okay. And so you recorded that, and then after the second day, you drove back to Milwaukee. Is that right?
Yes, we went home.
Do you remember, did the record come out right away, or when? Do you remember when it came out?
No, I don't.
But it came out on a label called Airplay, is that correct?
That's the 45, that's what it says. Again, I don't remember much about that other than how it came about.
Yeah, I think the Telfi guys, they had two labels. One was called Or, and one was called Airplay. And then they produced some stuff for other labels.
Okay.
So, and that record, did you bring your own band, or who was the band on that record?
Studio band.
So they were already in the studio, and you pretty much had to just teach them songs on the fly.
I think Jim Porter came up with some, well, that was with Betty and myself later. No, I don't remember who played behind us.
Okay. So, but that record was released soon after you recorded it, is that correct?
Yes, it was real soon.
Did it get any play in Milwaukee or Chicago?
I don't think Milwaukee. I don't remember hearing it on the radio in Milwaukee. I don't know about Chicago.
Okay. So, what happened? Did the group stay together after that record?
Well, maybe a couple of years or so, maybe three. Floyd was, when the comic books broke up, he kind of went into Sammy Davis Jr. Type of material. And so then that left me, Betty, and William. Betty, William got in trouble, and that left me and Betty.
So, and you and, so you and, that was like 3 years, so by the early 70s, all of that happened.
Yes.
And you and Betty wanted to continue to sing?
Yes.
So, did you form a new act? What was the story?
Jim Porter, somehow, maybe my brother-in-law got us connected. I don't remember for sure. But Jim Porter would give me an instrumental, told me to take it home and come up with a melody and lyrics. And that's what I did, and I would teach it to Betty. And once we got it together, which would be the following week, we go back and record.
So you were like a male-female duo at that point, kind of like Marvin and Tammy or Peaches and Herb, is that right?
Yeah, I really loved a male and female voice doing love songs.
Okay. So did you have a name for your duo?
Well, we went as Billy and Betty. It was the first 45. And then Porter said, listening to us, the second record, you guys are soulful. I'm going to call you the Soulful Twins. And I believe, well, I'll leave it at that.
Okay. So, actually, on my show, I only have 20 minutes left. And you have more groups that you were in that we would definitely run out of time. So I was thinking now would be an okay time to kind of stop the story. And then next week we can do a part two where we cover your career with Billy and Betty and then the other groups that you were in. Is that okay?
That's wonderful.
Okay, so this last record I'm going to play is the flip side to Lonely World. This track is called Scout. And then listen, next week I will be back on the air with Billy Miller talking about the rest of his career. So this next record is Billy and the Highliners with – and actually, let me ask you a little bit about this first, actually. This record is listed as the A side on the Airplay record. Is that correct?
Yes.
But did you intend for the dance side to be the A side, the ballad side to be the A side? Do you know how that happened?
No, I liked The Lonely World more. And then I felt under pressure to come up with something. And dance songs were very popular. And like I said, the comic books, they were novelty. I thought, well, let me try to come up with a song, dance song. And I didn't know what side they were going to promote as an A side.
So yeah, they ended up promoting this song Scout, which is actually, it's a pretty good funky song, but obviously I prefer Lonely World. It's a really nice ballad. So this last record I'm going to play for today as part of the interview is Billy and the Highliners with Scout, and then we will pick up the rest of the interview next week. So, Billy, thanks so much for being on the air, and I will talk to you more next week.
Well, thank you for teaching about myself.
But, you know, this stuff happened a long time ago, and, you know, a lot of people don't really remember or even think of a lot of the stuff they did a long time ago as important until, you know, somebody approaches them and is like, you know, this is history. So I'm glad you're still around to tell your story, and we'll talk more next week. So right now this is Billy and the Highliners, and this track is called Scout.
Better.